Welcome to the O Woman Podcast, where we discuss so many things about women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries, and we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. Thanks for joining me today. This is episode 44 of the O Woman Podcast, and I'm really excited about the show today. This is really a two-part show. The second part should be coming out tomorrow, but I wanted to kind of get down and dirty with it and spend some time talking about our actual genital selves and our crotches and that area, because we hear all these words. You know, we hear the word vulva, we hear the word clitoris, we kind of know what they are, but do we really know exactly where they are? Do we know what they're near? Do we know what they do? And do we know, like, really cool, bizarre facts about them that make that area even neater than it is already? So today is really everything you ever wanted to know about vaginas and vulvas. First of all, the vulva is the external genitalia, and this includes the labia majora, the labia minora, kind of that area. So those are the big lips, and the little lips is really what that is, and I'll talk more about those in a little bit, but we'll kind of start from the top down, or from the more external, less delicate areas, and then we'll go more toward the internal, more delicate areas, and then we'll stop right as we start to enter the vagina, and we'll talk more about what's going on inside of us tomorrow. So the area that you've probably heard of, it's called the mons pubis, and this is really, this means pubic mound. It's that mass of, like, fatty tissue that's over the pubic symphysis of your pubic bones, and the pubic symphysis of your pubic bones, what that is your pelvis isn't actually one solid bone. It comes together kind of in the front area. If you reach down and you feel kind of right above your urethra area, depending on, I guess, the way you're shaped, there's like a hard bone there, and that's part of your pubic symphysis. The two sides of your pubic bone come together and are fused with this kind of cartilage piece, which is flexible, which is really great for childbirth because your bones are literally going to move when the baby comes out if you need to. So that's really good. You can really stretch more than you think you can because your hip bones can shift a little bit. Now, the mons pubis also has another name. It's called the mons veneris, which literally means mountain of Venus, which sounds really romantic and poetic and bizarre. But interestingly, this area also gives rise to the term venereal disease. You can see sort of the root word, mons veneris, mountain of Venus, and venereal disease. So it has sort of a romantic underpinning, and then it also has kind of a, gross kind of negative thing going on with that nickname, or just another name for it. So I'm going to call it the mons pubis or the pubic mound. I feel like that's more common in more common usage, and people just know, you know what I'm talking about. So this area grows hair. Generally, it's the most obvious area of your genital region, and especially so because it grows hair. One of the theories about growing pubic hair in the first place, kind of separately and in, much thicker and in much more, just much more hair in that area, is because it kind of makes that area stand out from the rest of our body. It kind of makes it more obvious and makes it more showy. And if you're someone who doesn't actually have any pubic hair, that you shave it, the area doesn't stand out. There isn't so much of a color contrast, because most people's pubic hair isn't really the same shade as their skin. Some people it is. Some people who have light skin and light hair, you know, but usually you have darker skin and lighter hair, or medium-toned skin and really dark hair. You know, it just depends on your, natural hair color and stuff. But as many of you know, your pubic hair, it doesn't match your head color. I always feel like it kind of more matches your eyebrow color a little bit or something when I've just talked to friends about it, and I noticed that with myself, that that's what I would guess with more people. So the mons pubis, the really cool thing about that is that kind of mound grows because of estrogen flooding the body at puberty. So if you remember this from when you were younger, that area wasn't as fatty, wasn't as fleshy when you were younger. because there was really no need for it to be. It's a coming of age kind of thing. It's a going through puberty and kind of reaching sexual maturity at a certain point, kind of thing. So the estrogen actually causes the growth of that area because it's a fatty area. It has some fat underneath, and estrogen gets that to kind of swell up and sort of stay there. It also is the same thing that causes the vulvas to grow as you go through puberty and to kind of become maybe a little bit more external looking, at least just get bigger and more swollen looking, which is kind of their natural state, until you get turned on, and then they get even bigger. So the mons pubis connects to the outer vulva area. So that's the labia majora, which literally means big lips. And you know what I'm talking about. It's the bigger, like, you know, flaps of skin, the bigger lips on your genital region. And the outside grows hair, and the inside doesn't. The larger labia also surround the labia minora, or minora. I say it differently every time, I feel like, which is, means the smaller lips. The labia majora also surrounds the clitoris, the urethra, the vaginal opening. It's a good protection, against outside forces. It helps keep the environment, and the pH and the good bacteria kind of in that area. It helps keep them protected so you're not getting wind burn, as the wind blows up your skirt. You have some protection. I mean, I guess maybe you're wearing underwear too, but. So like I said, the outside of the labia majora has hair, and the inside doesn't have any hair. Inside instead, it has like oil and sweat glands. And inside the skin of that, this larger labia is like, there's like tissue and fat and stuff. And just like I said before with the mons pubis, this fat is sensitive to the estrogen. So when estrogen floods your system, you know, or enters your system and starts to really interact with your body when you go through puberty, it starts to swell and they start to get larger. Just, the same when you go through menopause and you lose the estrogen in your system, and you have a lot less, they go down. They aren't as swollen or large. They kind of start to recede a little bit. So that'll be something interesting to notice in, you know, in yourself as you get older and you go through menopause. So under this fat in the larger labia, there's erectile tissue, the same kind of erectile tissue that men have in their penises. And it engorges with blood when you get turned on. And so your labia majora, same thing with your labia minora too, they get bigger and your labia minora get like redder and more flush with blood when you're turned on, or sexually aroused, whatever. Also, the labias can get engorged semi-permanently when you're pregnant because they're so sensitive to blood volume and blood flow. And when you're pregnant, the blood in your body like pretty much doubles. You have so much more volume of blood going through your system that area will really readily, you know, absorb it and swell. So you could have an engorged labia majora and minora at different points in the pregnancy. So inside of the labia majora is the labia minora. And there's another name for these, and I didn't know this until today. I was looking it up. They're called the nymphae, which is Greek for the maidens of the fountain, so like nymphs. And I feel like you kind of see where I'm going with this, the word nymph or that kind of a root word or prefix or whatever. These maidens of the fountain had a sexual appetite that was so intense that's where the word nymphomania came from, which is pretty interesting. And one book I was reading, the author was talking about how it's interesting how we know what nymphomania means. It means like women who are way, way into sex, but we don't really know the term for men who are way, way into sex. And there is a term similar to nymphomania that no one's really ever heard of. So like I said, the smaller labia minora, literally means little lips. Not a very creative name when you think about it, but an accurate name when you think about how both of the labia do look like, if you turn them sideways, the lips of your mouth. So the labia minora, like I said, they don't have any hair. And if you look closely, if you check yourself out, which I encourage you to do, so you know exactly what's going on down there, just do it anyway, just whatever, you'll see these little bumps kind of on it. And you're thinking, what are those? What they are is they're oil glands. And And as I'll explain later, they secrete a lot of good stuff for that area, a lot of fat and oil and kind of waxy kind of substance, which keeps that, your genital region really healthy. Now the cool thing about, well, another cool thing, all this stuff is cool, about the labia minora is that it is like, it's the most variable in size and shape and stuff of all of our, you know, female genitalia, of the vulva area especially. The little lips, they can be really small such that they are pretty much completely covered up by the labia majora, or they can be really big. They can kind of hang out, and that is something that you would see upon first glance, a lot more immediately than looking at the larger labia. Now it's also really cool that when this area swells with blood, just like the labia majora does when you're sexually aroused, it gets a lot bigger proportionally than the labia majora does. The labia minora can get, you know, two or three times as big as its natural state as it swells up, as it widens out, kind of. And another cool thing, too, is if you're looking at yourself and you're thinking, huh, I don't know if my little labia is normal, it very likely is. There's such a large like normal range of the labia minora, because it's, you know, it's the most variable of that area. They can be asymmetrical. One side can be longer, the back can be longer, the front can be longer. It's no big deal. It's all totally normal and cool. And an interesting thing to note is some of our primate relatives, they have really big ones, that you've like really noticed more than any other area on their body. And sometimes they'll kind of drag them around on the ground when they're turned on or when they're trying to attract mates, because they leave some of their pheromones in that area. I'm just imagining how funny it would be if we did that. So like I was saying, the labia minora, they're super variable. You can have really little ones, asymmetrical ones, long ones, really pink ones, red ones, gray ones. It's all normal. It's totally fine. So don't be stressed about what your body looks like. You were born that way. You're supposed to be that way. Like it for what it is, because you're wonderful. I found a really interesting website, and the name is actually stupid. The name is Embarrassing Bodies, but it's meant to be like a forum and like a photo, different photo galleries to show kind of the normal range, in different body parts. But this one that I found is Embarrassing Bodies Vulva Gallery, and it's really the opposite of embarrassing. It's just showing you what normal can be. So I'm going to put a link to that in the resources on bodies, and I'm also going to put a link to it inside of the text for this episode on the website, awomanpodcast.com. So you can look at it and see if you've never found a reliable source for looking at different vulvas. You always run across some creepy website. Check this out, and there's a conversation underneath it where people are talking, and some people are asking goofy questions, but mostly it seems like young women or women saying, am I normal? I feel like mine looks like this picture. And men and women responding and saying, no, that's normal. Mine's like that. Or men don't care. They like you however you are, you know, so it's kind of a cool resource. So I'll put that on there. So this exciting vulva region, one big fact about that whole area, the labia minora, the labia majora, and then just all of the skin in that area, it sweats. If you work out, sometimes you'll realize, whoa, my crotch is really sweaty, and you're thinking, is this discharge or whatever? And then you're like, no, it's sweat. That's totally normal. Your body is supposed to sweat in that area, and that's women's generally most efficient place to sweat. Men, I think, are really efficient sweating in their armpits a lot more than women are. In most cases. So be glad that that area sweats, because it protects you. It takes care of you. Now, when it sweats, it also... No, sorry, not when it sweats. It also just naturally, all of the vulva region, like I was saying, that the labia minora has those oil glands and things like that, all of that area does. And they secrete something that's called sebum. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. But it's made up of oils, wax, like fat, cholesterol, and this really takes care of that region, because it waterproofs that area of your body against blood, so like menstrual blood in your period. It keeps your period from kind of sticking to everything and hanging out and maybe messing up the pH of the region, or hanging out like between the folds of your body in a way that could give you an infection, you know. And it also keeps the urine out, and it keeps out just bad bacteria that you're not supposed to have in there. And you're supposed to have lots of bacteria inside of you, but the good kind. And it fights off all of the bad kind. So you really, you want to keep the good guys in and the bad guys out. And this, what your body secretes in that area does a really good job of doing that and protecting yourself. So your, when you feel sweaty or when you feel kind of oily or, you know, wet down there, just in normal life, you're supposed to. That's normal. A dry vagina would be like a really unhealthy vagina because you can't, you know, fend off the different liquids that might come that way that shouldn't be there. So another important body part that many, many women know about is the clitoris. And this is located, you can always look up, you know, a diagram of your body online, as I encourage you to do if you haven't really looked in detail. And compare it to yourself as you're checking yourself out in the mirror. This is like a really good experiment just to see where everything is so you know. But the clitoris is, it's above the urethra, so it's above where you pee. And it's near where the labia minora lips kind of meet and come together. And above that is the clitoral hood, which is kind of like a protection for the clitoris because it can be a sensitive thing for some people, less sensitive for others. And it just protects it. I mean, come on. Everybody needs some protection. Also, I wanted to mention the theory of the G-spot, and I'm going to talk more about this in a future episode. Some people don't believe the G-spot exists. Some people do. I definitely believe it exists. And the people that do believe it exists, one of the theories is that it's kind of an extension of the clitoris that it runs along kind of and goes to the inside of your body. And that's what I think that it is. I think it is an extension of the clitoris, or maybe even the clitoris is an extension of that. And depending on the way your body is, you might have more sensitivity inside or outside. And in my case, I've said it before, that I am less interested in my clitoris's experience than the inside G-spot area. So I really think that I have more sensitivity and nerves and stuff on the inside portion of that. And so that's why I really think that orgasms are on the clitoral and vaginal continuum. So sometimes they're more one way than the other. And that's, to me, the difference between clitoral and vaginal orgasms. And you know, the sexual experience can change, you know, how you experience things each time, or you can have a tendency to have an orgasm more one way than the other. So that's just an interesting thing that I wanted to note that I'll talk a lot more about in the future, because I am really passionate about believing the G-spot exists, especially just in my own experience. So we cannot skip over the urethra. It's not a very exciting sexual spot, but we can't skip over that because it's important, and that's where we pee. So unlike men, women have two different exit points from the body. Men ejaculate sperm and pee out of the same hole. And we don't. We have two different ones. We don't ejaculate sperm, but our vagina is one hole and our urethra is another one, and it's above it. And I've always wondered maybe there's even been research done about this, I don't know, but if the reason our urethra is... If the reason our urethra is located above the vagina is so that pee can actually kind of rinse off that area if needed. I was always told after you have sex, you should go pee afterwards. It kind of rinses everything out. And I really firmly believe that's true. I think that's helped me, steer clear from yeast infections through the course of my life in a really good way. And it's just it's a good thing. And you're not going to only get the pee on you in a bad way because you have all of that great sebum oils and wax, you know, wicking all that away like the back of a water bird, like a duck or a goose or something. They never get too cold because they don't get wet because their feathers wick it all away. Kind of like your crotch. The next area that I want to discuss, even though it's just like the urethra, not that sexy of a region, is the perineum. And you might have heard more about this area kind of in relation to childbirth because people kind of worry about their perineum tearing when the baby comes out. And it can tear, but that's also normal. It's not a huge, thick chunk of skin. It's kind of that skin area. It's not skin like where hair grows. It's the moist kind of pink skin tissue area that's underneath your vagina and it's above your butthole, right in there. And you know, if your butthole grows hair around it, the perineum doesn't grow hair on it. It's still kind of a moist, wet area. And you can do things, to try to help your perineum from tearing when you're giving birth. So water birth apparently helps with that in a good way. I think that has to do with kind of being moisturized and stuff. You can also, My thoughts would be probably, you know, rubbing a really natural moisturizer on it, like a coconut oil or an olive oil, to kind of get it primed up and ready to stretch. Because that's the thing, is it stretchy, and it needs to be able to be stretchy when you're having a baby, so it doesn't tear. I mean, it might, but it'll still also heal, especially if it's stitched up, which in this day and age, it always is, you know, if that happens. So anyway, so that's the area below the vagina. We don't need to talk about the butthole, because we know what that does. And for different people, that can be a sexual region. And for some, it is very sexual. For some, it isn't. But that, since that's not really considered in the vulva, external genitalia, section, we're not going to talk about that today. But And then the grand finale, really, of this entire external genital region for women is the vagina, the vaginal opening. Now, most of the vagina is inside, and so I'm only going to talk about the, you know, just briefly the vaginal opening today, because this is the entrance to the next conversation that we're going to have about all that internal good stuff that we have going on, the cervix, the uterus, the ovaries, all those different things that are paired really with the outside of your body too. So the vagina stretches back. It's about 4 to 5 inches deep, you know, naturally. It's like a tunnel, and it ends in the cervix, and it begins, you know, at the labia. So the opening there, kind of the labia minora, kind of turn into or fade into or whatever, the opening of the vagina. And the cool thing about the vagina is it can either appear to be very opened or appear to be very closed. So when you're not turned on, especially when you're a young girl, you know, way before you're interested in sex at all, like I said, the labia haven't like kind of grown yet. So it's a very closed system, you know, nothing really goes in and out, nor should anything be going in and out. But when you go through maturity, all that kind of stuff, it can appear to be more open, especially if you're turned on. But also, depending on, you know, just your natural body shape and how you're sitting, it could look more open or closed depending. So we'll stop there, and we'll talk about the inside of your fantastic body next time. So I really had a great time talking about this today. I love talking with you guys always. Just a reminder, make sure you check out the website, owomanpodcast.com. Leave any comments, questions, ideas for a future episode. If you feel like I left out an important bit of information about the genital region, let me know. I don't want to leave out anything. I just, you know, was a little pressed for time. So I would love to even just do another episode describing everything in even greater detail. I encourage you also to, like I said, check yourself out in the mirror and identify these spots, because we imagine we know all these things about our body, and we usually do, but it's, you know, you have them, but do you actually know what yours specifically looks like? How many people really compare piece by piece to themselves to a diagram? So I think you should totally do that. It's fun. It'd be a great segue from naked time into kind of exploring your body and just learning about it in a scientific way, or even in a sexual way. It's up to you. Also, check out the Facebook page, O Woman Podcast, on Facebook, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Please, that would be fantastic. Also, if you feel like it, it would be really great for you to rate the episodes, so that some ratings give me some stars on iTunes, so some ratings can go through, and it can be more visible to other people. So thanks again for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Bye.